Have you ever wondered why you can teach your dog a behavior and they do it so well, and then you go to show it to somebody and your dog acts completely brain dead, like they have total amnesia and they have no idea what you're talking about? You just get a blank stare. Or maybe you've taught your dog that certain behaviors are not acceptable, and you've provided a consequence for that, but then they do it again and you can't understand why and it drives you nuts. Well, you're not alone. And we're going to explain all of that to you today.
Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training.
So I just want to go ahead and apologize right now that the audio quality on this podcast is so poor. And I know it's not the first one. I forgot to plug in my microphone. Rookie mistake. So I apologize. The next one will be better. I promise you. But as a side note, it's very punishing because I've recorded this podcast now 3 times, and I just realized that I didn't have my microphone plugged in, and I am ready to stab myself in the eyeballs, really. So very, very punishing, which is good because that means I won't forget next time, because that's how that works. All right, guys, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Off Leash and Unfiltered. I'm Katie Pepe, owner of Diamond Canine Dog Training here in Biddeford, Maine. We specialize in e-collar training, both for off-leash obedience and behavior modification. So helping people stop all of those unwanted behaviors like barking and jumping and more serious stuff like leash reactivity, resource guarding, separation issues, even fearfulness and all that stuff. And we also do puppy training. So that's who we are and what we do. And this podcast is brought to you as our way of sharing everything we know, everything we see, say, and do, everything we talk about with our customers with you guys so that the information is there for those that are looking for it. A lot of this information is very, very hard to find because the internet is just full of garbage and lies. And so we're very, very passionate about being open and being honest, and talking about the truth every day. And unfortunately, there is a culture right now that just has a really infantile sort of philosophy on life, an infantile worldview. And, you know, it's thought that corrections are bad and punishment is bad. And the fact is, those things are 100% healthy and necessary for behavior to take shape in a functional manner. So if you're going to function properly in society, there does need to be negative consequences attached to behaviors, right? I'm sure you can think of a bazillion things that if you did, there would be a negative consequence for that. And there might be things we want to do that we don't do, and that's why we don't. It's because we wouldn't be able to tolerate the consequence that would then follow. So that is normal and healthy. And without that, you have chaos, right? Complete chaos. But anyway, let's dive in without further ado. So I want to talk today a little bit about how your dog learns, because we can go over, and I have lots of videos on how to teach behaviors, right? If you go to our Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, that sort of thing, all kinds of videos on how to build obedience behaviors. And we will talk about that super, super briefly. Obviously, this isn't the right place for me to teach you how to teach a behavior with your dog. You're better suited to watch a video where I'm actually working with a dog. makes a little sense. But if you understand how your dog makes associations, then you can be very successful taking that knowledge and applying it in any scenario, really. So knowledge is power. So you need to understand how that's happening. But even more importantly, on the back side of that, you need to understand what needs to happen for those associations to stick. And I have a really funny story about my own dog that, and I love telling the story. I tell it to my customers. You know, it's funny because most dog trainers, I think they want people to think that like their dog is like perfect and really well trained and super well behaved. And my dog is well trained. But you know, it's embarrassing to tell people that your dog ever does anything wrong, but they're dogs, man. Like they're dogs, right? They're not robots, and we don't want them to be robots. I hear that all the time. Of course not. Nobody wants their dog to be a robot. But that means occasionally, or more frequently, your dog is going to do things that you don't like, right? But it's a hilarious story, and I think it will really sum up what we're going to talk about. It'll really illustrate what we're going to discuss today. So anyways, let's just briefly talk about, I don't like to spend a lot of time on like the boring technical stuff, but let's just briefly talk about how your dog learns, right? So your dog learns through associations. Basically, they learn through patterns, right? So you have to think, when you're thinking about how do I teach my dog pattern, how do I get them to make the association I want them to make, think of things as predictors. So if you've ever heard of Pavlov and Pavlov's dogs, where he basically conditioned the dogs when they heard a bell ring to salivate, right? And he did that by attaching the bell, the sound of the bell, to the act of getting food. And so after enough conditioning, after enough repetition, you could remove the food, and when you ring the bell, the dogs would salivate. Whereas obviously before all of that conditioning, if you rang the bell, the dogs would not salivate because there was no association made. So that illustrates really well how to make an association. So when you think about that process, the first thing that happened was the bell rang. And then food was introduced. Now that's really important, right? So far this sounds like, well, duh, but when you really think about it, if he rang the bell while he was introducing the food, right? If the food appeared actually before the bell rang, that association probably wouldn't have been made. So the order of operations is actually really, really important. And that is the reason why when we are teaching a command, we don't say the word right away. Like that's part of the reason. We teach the dog the behavior first, and then we start saying the word. Okay, so let me back up. That sounds really confusing. When we're teaching a behavior, once we get to the point where we want to teach the dog a word, okay, so say I want to teach my dog sit. I am going to say the word sit, but I'm not doing anything. I'm not showing them food. I'm not moving. I'm not pulling on their leash. I'm not doing anything. I'm just saying the word sit, right? Because that has to be the first. If I'm trying to make an association with that word, then that word needs to stand alone without anything else really going on so that they actually hear it. And then we can show them what that predicts. Okay, again, think about predictions. So we say the word sit. Then, once we're completely done saying the word, it has landed on their ears and they heard it. Now we can come into the second step with the predicted behavior and get them to sit, right? Because just saying it isn't going to get them to do it. They don't know what it means yet. It's like talking to someone that speaks a different language. You can say it as many times as you want to and as slowly as you want to. It doesn't mean anything. So we say the word, we say it once, and then after that, we're going to get the behavior of sitting, right? It might be holding food over their head. It might be pulling up gently on their leash. It might be stepping into them with our body language. But whatever we have to do to get them to do the behavior. So now we have the word sit, predicts, butt on the floor, right? And then we can get into markers too, where it's like the second the dog puts the butt on the floor, we say yes. And then that predicts a food reward. And ideally, again, I don't want this to turn into a long technical discussion about obedience training. We have videos for that. But ideally, you've already conditioned the dog, just like Pavlov and his bell, that yes predicts food. Yes predicts food. I actually prefer to use a clicker instead of the word yes, but a lot of people just use the word yes, and that's fine. So yes means food, right? So you teach sit, then behavior. As soon as you get the behavior, yes, and then that predicts food, right? So it's all just a series of predictions, right? And so you can get your dog to make as many associations really as you want them to be effective. Okay. All that being said, that's like the basic outline of your dog making associations, right? So timing is important, right? Once your dog makes an association, you can actually increase the amount of time in between the initial predictor and then the thing that it predicts. For instance, like we said, yes predicts food, right? In the beginning, we're going to do yes, food. Yes, food. But you can actually stretch that out. And so now you can say yes, you can wait a few seconds, give food. Say yes, wait a few more seconds, give food. Right? And so your dog can absolutely learn that yes predicts food, even if it's going to be a while before it comes. So making associations is actually what we're doing when we're teaching an obedience command. We're attaching a word to a behavior, and we're attaching the execution of that behavior to a reward. Which sounds really simple, but most people aren't really efficient with that process because they don't understand the importance of timing. So, and for instance, when we say sit, we shouldn't be already holding the food over the dog's head, right? It has to be one thing predicts another. You can't do them together. You won't get the same associations. Your training will take much, much longer. So you have to look at your sequence and make sure you're actually slowing yourself down and you're taking it one step at a time so your dog can clearly hook A to B to C to D. Really, really important. But watch some videos so you can get a better idea about, if you're trying to teach your dog some new behaviors, so you can get an idea about exactly what it should look like so you can see hands-on how that sequence operates and how the dogs are making those associations. But even once your dog makes that association, you're not necessarily done, right? Because now we have a thing called generalization. And generalization basically means your dog has the ability to learn that things only mean things in certain contexts. And so if you're only doing, for instance, let's just take the sit scenario that we just talked about. If you're only doing that in your living room when you're alone, well, it might not look the same when you're in your living room and your family is there. It might not look the same when you go out in the front yard. It almost certainly won't. It might not look the same when you go out to the park, or to a busy store. Again, it almost certainly won't. Right? Number one, because yes, it's harder. But number two, none of that stuff has been part of the picture. So your dog is taking a picture of everything. When they're learning patterns and they're learning associations, they're taking a snapshot of everything going on. And so if you change even just one thing in the environment, it can alter the behavior. It can alter the association. And so that's why it takes a little bit of time to do obedience training. That's actually why it's harder to build up a new behavior versus to eliminate a behavior, which is pretty simple. So number one, you're asking the dog to learn to do something, which is harder than not doing something. But then you're teaching the dog that they to learn that that is the case in every scenario. When I say this word, I want this behavior. You have to go through the trouble. Excuse me. You have to go through the trouble of making sure your dog knows that association should be the same in every environment, whether it's light, whether it's dark, whether we're alone, whether there are people, whether there are other dogs, whether we're outside. So you need to put in those reps to make sure your dog sees that same exact ABCD, ABCD in a variety of contexts. So they start to generalize it. So they know, yep, it is always this word followed by that behavior. And that takes reps. And then, you know, the generalization piece leads us into our discussion about discrimination. So like I said, your dog is taking a snapshot of everything that's happening around them. So they learn the pattern in every context. Okay. So let's just say that you're the type to feel a little bit self-conscious about correcting your dog. Actually, before we talk about that, let's just back up a little bit and talk about eliminating behavior. Let's talk about punishment, because we've been talking about reward and building associations to build new behaviors, to build obedience behaviors. Let's talk a little bit about stopping behaviors. It's much, much simpler. It's usually much faster, which again, it blows people away because they feel like stopping behaviors is so difficult. It's not usually. Building behaviors is much, much more complicated. So we just talked about all the generalization that needs to take place. And, you know, there's a lot we didn't go into about getting your dog to do the behaviors because they don't know what you want. When it comes to eliminating behaviors, there's really not a lot of training that needs to happen. It's just an association, right? There's this behavior your dog does, and you're just going to attach that to something negative so that it becomes really uncomfortable to do that behavior, and then they just don't do it anymore, right? So we're not asking them to do anything fancy, and that's why it's so much easier. We're just making the behavior uncomfortable. Behavior goes away. So both with reward consequences, right? You should have a marker. We talked about using the marker of yes, and the timing of that needs to be really good. As soon as your dog does the behavior, you use that marker, and then you follow that with your reward. Same thing with unwanted behaviors. Your dog is going to do something you don't like. Let's say they run up to someone and they jump. In that moment, you're going to use a marker. Your marker is probably going to be no. It can be anything you want, by the way. It doesn't matter. But we use the word no. Most people use the word no. So dog jumps up. We say no. And then we follow that no with a punishment, right? So usually that's going to be a higher stimulation on an e-collar. But it could also be a good firm leash pop if your dog has a leash on. It could be a bonk, the rolled up towel, right? So rolled up cotton towel. You say no, and then you take the towel and you go and you bonk the dog right on the head. It won't hurt them, the towel, but you need to do it very firmly, right? And so different dogs respond differently to different things, right? You should do whatever is the most effective for you and your dog. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you can get creative with it as long as we're not causing any harm to the dog and it's effective and it reaches the end goal of behavior eliminated. That's all that matters. Nothing else matters. Some people use noisemakers, spray bottles. I don't really like that stuff because my experience has been that, you know, a lot of times you have to do it a few times, which is okay, but then the dog just starts to blow it off because they don't care about it that much. They go, oh, it's just a noise. It doesn't do anything. And so that's not super effective long-term at actually eliminating the behavior. But so the timing of your marker, right? No, as soon as the dog does the behavior or is about to do the behavior. And then you, again, follow that with a correction. You don't do them at the same time because your dog needs to clearly see a prediction. They need to clearly see, I heard no when I did this behavior, and I know that no is attached to a punishment, which is then coming, right? So it has to be one and then two. They can't happen together. That's much less effective. Okay. Now, discrimination. This is where my funny story will come in. But because the dog is taking a snapshot of everything that's going on, they will learn when things don't apply. They will learn when you don't follow through. They will learn when that behavior isn't expected. They will learn when there is no correction for bad behaviors. So we just talked a little bit about the correction process. Let's say that you are the type to feel a little bit self-conscious about correcting your dog, or maybe just in front of certain people, right? So maybe it's your mother. Let's just say it's your mother that just thinks it's so mean that you correct your dog for doing his monkey business. And so when your mother comes over, you tend not to correct the dog. Well, guess what? Your dog's going to figure that out real fast. And so you may very well have a dog that's well trained and well behaved and everything's going swimmingly. And then when your mother comes over, suddenly your dog turns into a real jerk. And that is normal, right? Because your dog has experienced that things are different. So he saw that same snapshot with you and that there's accountability for certain behaviors. But then when your mother comes over, he's experienced that that accountability isn't there anymore. So your dog isn't trying to be a jerk. Your dog is just doing what they've learned. They're literally doing what you have taught them to do. That is just reality, right? So people will tell me, like if we're having discussions about this stuff, they will tell me what they think they've done and what they think has happened and what they think their dog has learned or knows, but the dog will tell the truth, right? So if you tell me that your dog starts acting up and like getting into the garbage or something when your mother comes over, then I know that it's because he's not getting corrected in that situation. So he has made that discrimination. There's a very good trainer out there who, Gary Wilkes, who, if you don't follow him, you should follow him on social media. You will learn a ton. And he actually made a post one time about a client he had where they taught the dog when the door was open that he cannot go through the door, right? There will be a negative consequence for going through the door unless the door stopper is faced in the other direction. And then it is okay to go through the door. So your dog can absolutely make those associations if you're willing to put in the work, the time, the effort, and the consistency. Right? So we don't often do things like that, mostly because it is a lot of effort and it is a lot of consistency, and people's lives are just busy and chaotic. And, if you're gonna have the door open and you're gonna have the door stop facing in the direction where the dog can't go through the door, then you need to address it if they do. And you need to correct that dog meaningfully if they do. Otherwise, the whole thing's just going to go down the drain. But I thought that that one was a pretty cool one and a really good example of how your dog is taking a picture of everything that's going on. And so if you change one thing and you're willing to put in enough reps to show them that pattern, that prediction, they'll learn it. They'll learn it. So, pretty cool stuff. But back to discriminations. So, funny story about my own dog. He likes to eat the cat food. And it's funny because this is a story about my mother. So, my mother is the type that will put the cat food when she comes over, she'll put the cat food, up on the counter or, on the pellet stove or something, so that the dog can get it. And we don't do that at my house. The cat food belongs on the floor. I'm not going to hide the cat food. I'm going to teach the dog to stay out of the cat food. So I've done that. Okay. If I'm home, my dog will not touch the cat food. It can sit on the floor. He can roam freely. He won't touch it. The next step was I taught my dog that when I leave, he still can't touch the cat food. Right. So I hid outside in my mudroom. I set up some cameras. I have a little baby monitor. And, sure enough, I opened up a nice fresh can. I went and hid out in the mudroom, and the second he was about to get into that cat food, I gave him a very, very high correction on his e-collar, and I made that cat bowl very, very hot. And I just want to point out real quickly for a second here that that's important, okay? If you want something to stick when you're not around, you better make it special. Okay, you better make it really, really meaningful. Because here's the thing, if you don't, okay, if you come in just high enough, all right, great, fine, do whatever you want, but at some point, your dog is going to give that another go again. They're going to give that another try, and they're going to find out they can still just eat it, right? And so it's not going to work. What's going to happen? Even if it works for a little bit, it's not going to stick. So if you want something to truly stick, it needs to be more meaningful, right? And that's true across the board, right? The more meaningful the consequences are, the more valuable they are, whether we're talking positive or negative, the more likely that thing is to stick, okay? But especially like if we're talking about something that we want to stick when we're not around, right? So when your dog gives it another go, you know you're not going to be there to see it. So it's really, really important to have a very meaningful consequence for those kinds of things. So like counter surfing, getting into the garbage, those are things we really set up to happen when we're not around, and we use really, really high consequences because also those are things that could be dangerous too. So could save your dog's life. But we want that to stick, and we know there's a chance we might not be around when the dog does it, so we need to make it count. All right, so I head out in the mudroom and I made the cat bowl really, really hot. And it worked, right? He ran away from the cat bowl, and now I can leave him roaming for 8 hours in the house by himself when I'm not around, and he doesn't touch the cat food, guys. Still to this day. So, but by the way, and just as another side note, I didn't trust him after one time, right? I set it up a few more times just to see what he would do. And it stuck. And I recommend, even once you know you can trust them, still just periodically set it up and check, right? Just periodically set it up and make sure that the behavior is not thinking about regenerating. But I can leave him home alone all day. He doesn't touch the cat food, and that's great. But if my mother is there, right? Because my mom will come over and she helps us out a lot, and I really appreciate it, Mom. But and she'll come over to spend time with my daughter, her granddaughter, and it's great. But when she's there, if I leave, if I have to go to work, and she's there, the dog just eats the cat food. So it blows people away because I can leave him alone in the house for 8 hours. Literally, he can roam around and walk by that cat food 100 times and he doesn't even think about eating it. But if my mom is there by herself, it's the first thing he'll do. He'll go over there and eat the cat food. But there's really no mystery in that at all if you understand how associations and patterns work, right? So it's not the dog trying to be a jerk. He's just doing what we've taught him. So he's just learned that when my mom is there, it's like, yeah, kick back. It's a free for all. Because my mom's not gonna, she's not gonna do anything. She's not gonna correct him for that stuff. And so, I mean, we've now had a discussion about that, and I can't make her hold him accountable, but then he needs to be in his kennel when she's there because I just that intolerable. So, but that's just the pattern that he's been presented with. Nothing more, nothing less. So people tend to read into this stuff. They tend to be blown away that the dog is so smart or such a jerk. Or it's like, no, plain and simple, this is just the pattern that is the truth, right? So the dog, again, dog always tells the truth. And the truth in my dog's case is he can't eat the cat food when I'm there. He can't eat the cat food when he's alone, but he can eat the cat food when she's there and I'm not. And he just knows. So your dog will discover these patterns. They will make discriminations. If there are certain times where there's no accountability, you can fully expect your dog to take advantage of that. Because that's just normal. It's just normal. Your dog, again, is the master at discovering whatever the pattern is. And so for that reason, like if you are the type to, and I'm not, by the way, I will light my dog up like the 4th of July with my mother there. It doesn't matter, but it's when I'm gone and she's there. And that's when he's learned that there's no accountability. And he'll be a total monkey too. He'll steal stuff out of the laundry. I mean, the first time she told me this, I'm like, are you sure you're talking about my dog? I couldn't even believe it. I mean, I could believe it because nothing surprises me, but it's just, it doesn't even occur to me that that stuff could happen because I just never see it. Never, ever, ever. But so if you are the type to feel like if you're struggling with feeling judged, with feeling criticized, if you are self-conscious about providing accountability for your dog for behaviors that you don't want to be part of their repertoire, it really pays to be aware of that. And yeah, I'd like to say, you know, work on that and do better. But easier said than done. And some people never will. So the other thing you can do is to at least be aware of that, right? So you don't put your dog in those situations and you don't give them the opportunity to find out that pattern or to rehearse those behaviors, right? So if I don't feel comfortable correcting my dog in front of people or in front of a certain person, and I know they have behaviors that they're going to do that I don't like, then I'm just not going to put my dog in that situation, right? If I'm not comfortable shocking my dog in front of Aunt Lulu, then I guess I'm never going to do anything with my dog and Aunt Lulu. you know, and that's too bad to let people dictate that. But I think at the very least, if you're just not there yet and you're not comfortable with certain things for some reason in certain environments around certain folks, then just don't put your dog in that position. Don't put yourself in that position. Where you're struggling with what to do, right? Because it's just miserable. Like you're trying to teach your dog certain things and, or not to do certain things and to be well behaved and to be the dog you want. You were so excited about it, right? When you started out and you thought, oh, I'm going to teach my dog all this stuff and he's going to be so well behaved and it's going to be so great and I'm going to be able to take him anywhere. And then you're in this position where you're uncomfortable and you're stressed. And you can see your dog starting to act up and you're having the social dynamic that you don't like. And you're trying to control your dog's behavior with the leash or like you're trying not to say anything to offend anybody. And who wants to do that? Like, I don't want to do that. Right? And I mean, granted, I'm the type to just tell people to go screw. But it's like, if you're not, or if you're if with certain people, maybe you're not, then just don't. Don't put yourself in that position because your dog will see that pattern and it will just serve to frustrate both of you more over the long haul, right? Because you can't eradicate and eliminate a behavior that you're going to allow the dog to do sometimes. Like that behavior is going to stay in their repertoire and they're just going to know. They're going to know that they can still do it. And that's just not helpful. It's not helpful to you. It's not helpful to them. It only serves to muddy the waters, and who wants that? No one wants that. But I thought that story would be good to share because people find it absolutely mind-boggling. But again, it's really not. When you think about how dogs learn, he's just telling me these are the associations, these are the predictions. And the dog will tell the truth every single time. All right, guys, that's it for today. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to next time.